DiscerningHearts.com presents Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors. I'm your host, Chris McGregor, and I am delighted to be joined by Amy Wellborn. She's written many books on various elements of Catholic life, spirituality, saints, and history. Amy has written for Our Sunday Visitor, the Catholic News Service, BeliefNet, the New York Times, and Commonweal. She has five children and lives in Birmingham, Alabama. With Amy Wellborn, we go inside the pages of Wish You Were Here, Travels Through Loss and Hope, published by Image Books. Amy, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris.
Wish You Were Here, Travels Through Loss and Hope. Incredible. And nothing like you've ever done before.
Well, that's true. Well, nothing like that had ever happened to me before, so yeah.
Well, why don't you give everyone the background?
Well, the brief background is that my husband, Mike Dubriel, and I, and three of our children had moved down here to Birmingham, Alabama, in the summer of 2008, where Mike had, who was a but regular guest on your show, was an author and had been an acquisitions editor for Our Sunday Visitor publications up in northern Indiana. But that summer, he had accepted an offer from Bishop Robert Baker down here in Birmingham to become the director of evangelization for the diocese. And so we had moved down here, and everything seemed to be going well. Really happy, you know, really content and pleased to be down in the South and, working, Mike working in a job where he really felt that he could use his gifts and really to serve the church. Everybody was happy in school. And then February 3rd, 2009, Mike and Joseph, who was seven at the time in second grade, left for school. Mike dropped Joseph off at school, went to the YMCA, got on the treadmill, and 10 minutes later, he started on the treadmill, he dropped, he collapsed, and was pronounced dead an hour later at the hospital. And so, he left that morning. I said goodbye, and the next time I saw him was that afternoon in the emergency room where he was deceased.
Mm. It was a shock that rippled through the Catholic community that I and Bruce and everyone else is so familiar with. I remember we were doing the morning show, and our news guy came in because it had just started coming across the wires, just starting to eke out that this happened. And just the stun, disbelief. It was just a shock. It's one of those moments where you just went, perpetual gasp.
And actually, I was talking to Father Robert Barron a while back, and he said that he was there with you guys that day, and he was there when the news came out. And I think part of it was just it was a shock, but I think also was his age. You know, he was 50. And I heard from several people, several men in particular, around that age, in decent shape, who said this really shook me up for a lot of reasons. But as you think, wow, death is real, and the reality of it, when it does hit in this kind of way, it's still just a shock.
And I think it wasn't even so much how quickly it happened, or that he was so young. He was only 50 years old. Mm-hmm. But the as I said, that collective gasp from all of us, because who knew that Mike Dubriel would have such an impact on all of our lives?
Yeah.
I mean, rippling throughout. I mean, this man is one of the most gracious, encouraging, nurturing, can I say level-headed?
Yeah, he was level. He was very level-headed.
And his influence in the lives of so many, so that when that, the ripple, who knew? Who knew? Mm-hmm. And I think after you finally caught your breath, the reaction went, oh, what about Amy and the kids? that was the second. And I think that's why it's so heart piercing in a way that grace is released, that this memoir has come out. And I just thank you so much.
Well, thank you for reading it. And that's the reason I wrote it, was because of, you know, the experiences that I had, as we'll talk about, you know, really were very, you know, clear signs of the continuing presence of God, that grace that you spoke about. And as I write in the book, you know, I know that I'm not alone in this experience by any means. It's the human experience. And I know, you know, so many people, and of so many people who have experienced similar experiences. I really ultimately felt that, you know, maybe I could help somebody a little bit through writing this book and getting it out there.
Well, you do say in the book that grief is not a straight line.
Right.
And I think that is, no matter, grief, the loss of a loved one, the grief over the loss of a job, over a home, or ultimately it's that, what are we grieving? It's a part of our identity has been taken and changed and manipulated. I mean, and I think that's where you take us in this memoir, is that it's not a straight line, and it has many different nuances.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that you've picked up on that. I mean, I think when I came up with the word through in there, travels through loss and hope, to me that was very important, because that one word, it expresses so much of the book, that it's not a journey from one place to another. There's no end, you know. It's through, is that you're always going back and forth. You walk in one room and the loss hits you hard, and then you walk into another room and you sort of grace enters and you see a reason for hope. And then the next day you just are going through the same thing. And yeah, the dynamic changes because time does that, grace does that, deep faith, deepening faith, you know, helps the hope win. But you never, you know, the loss is real, because the loss is a loss. And the other thing that I was really interested in trying to work out and express in this book is that this is not just a book about the death of a person. Because as you point out, you know, we live as human beings in a world that is incomplete, that is characterized by regret, missed opportunities, incompleteness, loss, because it's not heaven. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the earth, it's the world, it's creation. And as beautiful and as evocative of it, as it is, of God's grace and God's presence, it is not heaven. And so we all, whether we have experienced the death of a spouse or a child or a close friend or not, we have all experienced and live with some kind of loss. My life is not exactly what I thought it would be. How do I retain hope in the midst of this? My marriage is not what I thought it would be. You know, where is the hope to be found? I'm not sure if I'm using my gifts the way I wanted to, or if I will ever be able to. Mm-hmm. How do I live with that in faith? And so, you know, that's sort of what I'm, one of, that's the meta theme of this book, is that, and the fact that, as St. Augustine points out so many times, God speaks to us through human love and through his creation. But those things are not God. And true peace is to be found in, you know, the appropriate ordering of our affections, and to appreciate and to love the people who, you know, mean so much to us and who speak to us so strongly of God's goodness and God's love. But to sort of understand and to live with the acceptance that they are not God, and that no matter what, our faith is in God and God's love and God's presence, no matter who's with us or what's going on in our life or what, you know, pain we're experiencing. So it's those sort of two bigger themes that I hope are, you know, meaningful to people, whether they have experienced death directly or not.
It's such a beautiful read. I think what we need to do is just to give a sense of why I think it's so special, because let's talk about Sicily. Why Sicily?
Okay. Well, you know, as I said, Mike died in February, and I sort of looked at, as the spring wore on, and as I stumbled out of the fog, I contemplated the summer, and I thought, well, what are we going to do this summer? And, you know, this is Alabama. It's hot. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, kind of, you know, deadly heat. We were in this relatively small gray apartment. I thought, well, I don't want to stay here, and there's no reason for us to stay here for the summer. Let's do something big. Fortunately, you know, we had the time and the resources to be able to do that, which I'm very aware and very thankful. And so I sort of thought, okay, well, we're going to take a trip, and where should we go? I didn't, you know, as I explain in the book, I didn't want to stay in the United States. Because Mike and I, you know, we like to travel as a family, mm-hmm. and it just seemed like every place we would go would remind me of him in some, or remind us of him mm-hmm. in some way. And so I thought, well, let's go to Europe. Chris, I really cannot pinpoint the moment or the time when Sicily entered my consciousness. I love Italy. I have an obsession with Italy. I have no Italian blood at all. And I think what it was that I didn't know anybody else who'd ever been to Sicily. It was totally foreign to me. I didn't know anything about it. When I started, I couldn't, you know, put it precisely on the map, except I knew it was in the Mediterranean. I thought, this is going to be so different and so foreign to our experience. I won't, you know, maybe for a while, I won't be reminded of Mike every time I turn a corner, mm-hmm. you know. Plus, you know, the more research I did, I thought, well, this might be fun, you know, for these little boys and for my daughter. There's lots of history. There's gelato. There's castles. There's beach and all of that kind of stuff. And I started planning. And so that's what the book is. It's an interplay between, as you say, sort of past and present and future, in a way, eternity, in which I document, you know, I journal the travels, I journal the trip to Sicily, interspersed with memories of those first couple of months after Mike died and what my children and I went through and thought and considered and prayed about. So it's sort of how one thing inspires another and causes reflection in another. And, of course, the point is, you know, I went to Sicily thinking, oh, you know, this will be an escape in a way, but, of course, it's not, because there is no escape, and we shouldn't want to, really. You know, you can't blame a person mm-hmm. for wanting to try to minimize the sense of missing somebody. So that's what the book is.
It wasn't as though you escaped. You know, Mike Dubrell,
right.
If anything, it allowed it to find its level. I mean, in his, yeah. in his continued presence in your lives, and that when we say we believe in things visible and invisible,
right,
it's a part of making that very real, making that statement a very mm-hmm. real statement.
Yeah, because, you know, when somebody dies like that, especially suddenly, but I imagine it's the same even if you anticipate somebody's death, all you experience at first is absence, you know, the space, mm-hmm. that's it. You know, you can't really see anything else except that absence. And I, you know, spent a lot of time those first couple of months sort of looking for him, you know, and it was irrational in a way, and I knew I wouldn't find him, but sort of just looking through things obsessively, kind of through his personal effects and our effects of our life together and so on, just trying to sort of recapture his presence and his life in my life. And then, you know, you eventually get to a point where you understand that you can't do that, and then at that point you're open to, as you say, more open to the invisible and understanding, you know, the deep reality of the community of saints, of and so on, and the promise of the resurrection. So,
in your writing, what really becomes seen is that presence through it, just in the extraordinary way that God works, through the eyes of your kids.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really helped you how to look at things.
Yeah, and I think that's another major theme of the book, is that the presence of children in your life, and whether it's, you know, I think your own personal children,
mm-hmm.
or just children that you're involved with and know, really makes a difference in grieving. I mean, I think that, you know, what children bring into the room is a challenge. It's a challenge to be hopeful, because, first of all, the way that they react, mm-hmm. is, which I document in many places, mm-hmm. through the book, that sort of veering between, you know, tears and anger and sort of playfulness almost about, mm-hmm. it, because they don't understand, or that's just how children think. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine here in Birmingham, a young man who lost his father when he was about 6 years old. And, you know, he says one of his big memories is getting into trouble at the funeral home for, like, playing around and fooling, mm-hmm. around with his cousins. And, you know, because that's the way kids are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think more importantly, when you experience a tragedy and a loss like this, the natural tendency is to turn inward and to think, well, this is the end. You know, since my life as I knew it, as I experienced it, that sort of part of my life is over, I can't really see beyond that, and therefore, sort of, what's the point? You know, that's it. But children present themselves to you and won't let you think like that, because you look at them and you think, okay, here's this kid, 7 years old, lost his dad. Do I want him to go through his life? Would that be the controlling factor in his life, is the sadness and the regret that I didn't know my dad after I was 7 years old, or maybe even for the four-year-old, I don't really remember my dad. You know, do you want that to be the thing that determines how they react to anything? Do you want that to be God in their life? You know, that's what it,
mm-hmm.
all comes down to.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want death, the death of their father, to be the God in their life? No, I don't. You know, I want them to have wonderful, joyful lives of knowing how good God is. And so if I want that for them, don't I want that for myself too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If I love them enough to want them to be constantly aware and to live in the awareness of God's graciousness and goodness and to be hopeful in that, that should, you know, I'm good enough for that too.
Mm-hmm.
I think if God wants that for them, God wants that for me too. That's what I learned from my kids from this period, is that if I want them to live in hope, and if I couldn't imagine them not living in hope, I have to want that for myself too and let God give it to me.
Mm. Yeah, I think what's so beautiful about entering into this journey with you and your beautiful family is that early on in the book, you talk about how grief, of course, means sadness, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that it also is, what you don't expect is the regret.
Right.
And
right.
that is constantly tripping you up and, as yeah. you said, knock you flat.
Yeah.
And it's, how do you learn to live without constantly tripping and falling flat from the regret? And mm-hmm. that's where I think we get stuck into that, and that can go on for a lifetime.
It can, and again, not just in relationship to death, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, in relationship to my own situation, yeah, the regrets were all over the place. They were regrets about what I did and didn't do that day that I found out that he died, regrets about maybe I should have, hindsight, into maybe there were some faint signals that something was wrong with him. I mean, maybe he seemed, you know, in retrospect, I sort of thought back through January, I thought, well, he did seem awfully sort of super tired in January. You know, I should have noticed that. You know, we should have noticed that. Regrets about you know, our relationship that, you know, maybe, be, you know, and I do talk about this in the book, because my own introversion, because of my own sort of reserve, I didn't, you know, enter in, you know, I didn't give him enough of myself. I didn't, you know, I was still, you know, in that sort of only child kind of mode that I've been in my whole life, and it's always a battle to sort of get out of, you know, the person who sort of is very relieved when everybody goes to bed at night, you know, because she can finally be by herself. And that, you know, regretting that maybe that because of that I didn't get out enough, I didn't benefit enough or enough from our marriage as I could have, or from just his friendship, because that's in essence what we had was a deep friendship. So regrets about all that kind of stuff, and you know, anybody who's listening can probably look back at their own life and say, you know, yeah, I know about regret. But then, again, it's a spiritual challenge to recognize God's presence in it all, and to recognize, most importantly, God's presence in the now, in the present, and to, you know, give the regrets to Him, and to, you know, be honest about giving the regrets. And then, and this is the most important thing, and this is sometimes the most challenging thing, to be able to listen to what He says and to do what His grace is enabling you to do. You know, one of my favorite scripture passages, one of my favorite narratives from the Gospels, is the exorcism of the Gerasene demoniac, in which this guy was, your listeners are familiar, was chained. He was so deeply possessed that he lived among the tombs. He was chained among the tombs, which there's something for you. He is chained amidst death. Then Jesus comes and drives out the demon, and the man cleans himself up. He's free. He moves out of the tombs, goes to the village where the people see how he's changed, see what Jesus has done for him. And the reaction, what's their reaction? Is it, oh, great, Jesus, free us from our tombs? No. They look at Jesus and they say, leave us. Mm. It scared them. And I had to sort of dialogue with that story again and again during, well, I still do, but during that first year after Mike died, was that I really, you know, knew that God was offering me graces constantly in order to heal and to see the bigger picture and to see the truth and to have deep faith in, you know, the truth of what Jesus has done through conquering death. And I had, you know, I would get up to that point and I would have a decision, a choice. Was I going to say, Jesus, yes, come and do this for me, and, you know, I accept this grace, or am I going to say, go away, I know better, mm-hmm. you know, I know what my grief should look like, I want to stay stuck here in these tombs. And that, to me, that was the constant sort of crossroads I came to again and again on that journey.
You have written so much for all of us as, you know, a master catechist, okay? And we, the author of books that have as their title, Prove It.
Yeah.
And then here you are in this moment. This is where really the rubber hits the road. I mean, it's one thing to write about it and talk about it. Now you got it. Can you live it?
Exactly. Exactly. And that was, you know, what I say in the book is that when I wrote Prove It books and Here Now and all those books, I believed what I wrote, and I believed what I thought I believed. I mean, I've struggled with the question of death and a fear of death for a long time, and, you know, sort of constantly work my way through, all right, do you believe in the witness of the apostles and the resurrection of Jesus? Yes, yes, yes. And, you know, sort of it's been an intellectual, but more than an intellectual journey for me, and acceptance and struggle. And, you know, I could argue, you know, I could, you know, argue with the, you know, Dawkins or whoever mm-hmm. about all of this and in total authenticity. But then when you're standing in front of your husband's body in a casket, it raises a whole different set of questions in a different way. It's like you have to start all over again. As I imagine it would be if you received a diagnosis of a terminal illness or confronted the death of anybody close to you. You have to really start all over again and not feel bad about it, because it is different. It is different. And so that's, again, one of the things I work through in the book over and over again. But I will say that, in a way, through various experiences that I had, really kind of profound experiences that I have that I recount in the book, I've reached a level of acceptance of death and faith in Christ that I didn't have 3 years ago. In a way, Mike was a very vibrant person and a very intelligent person, and he always said I was smarter than him, but I would disagree with that. I think he was a lot smarter than I am. And we had our disagreements about various issues, but I really trusted his faith. His faith was a real witness to me. Let's put it that way. His faith was a real witness to me. I sort of began to feel that in death, he was still witnessing to me, and that he had, and again, this is an experience I recount in the book, is that I had a moment where I sort of felt and experienced that he had taken this journey and that he was still sort of leading, and that if he could do this, I could do it too. And that it was all true, And again, it's a different level of acceptance of truth. And so, it's part of that weird kind of puzzling, mysterious mix that I talk about in the book, but that we hit up against all the time, in which tragedy and joy and loss and understanding and death and life are just constantly mixed together. And the beauty of and the truth of the Catholic faith is that it's all there every time we walk into a church, every time we pray. We're not, in our church, the true church, we don't sort of siphon parts off. We don't have just part of the picture. We have the whole picture. We have the crucifix before our eyes all the time. But at the same time, as we're looking at that crucifix, we proclaim, I believe in the resurrection of the body. We have the Pieta, but at the same time, we have, the joyful witness of and the truth of Jesus with us in the Eucharist and Jesus' continuing presence in the Eucharist. So it's all there, and this is where we live, in this mystery of all of this being mixed up together in the present life on earth. Now we see through a glass darkly. My book is about the hope and sort of the increasing faith in the truth that someday we will see face to face.
Wow. Amy, for me anyway, Mike Dubrel was one of the first to really open on the contemplative understanding for me in a way that it helped me to enter into it. And I hope you don't mind me categorizing him that way as a contemplative, but he was so great at pondering and going in and allowing the experience to shape us, to believe in that experience and to shape us. And you could see where he just was being drawn into it. And even through that experience, he's still teaching us because of your marriage. And because of Christ so centered in that relationship, you now are articulating it so beautifully and guiding us with that experience into that contemplative heart experience as well. Am I making sense? I feel like I'm rambling, but
no, it's what I hope to do. I mean, it would be the only reason for me to put this to paper and get it out there is that, Somebody the other day bought a copy of my book for a friend of hers whose husband had died very suddenly in her presence at the age of 38, 8 years ago. And she said this woman is still kind of living in devastation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, every time I hear something like that, which is every day or so, I think, okay, you know, fruit. I won't say it's that I'm glad it happened. I mean, I'm still selfish enough to say no.
Mm-hmm.
But I want there to be fruit. You know, I want there to be fruit. And it's something that I know that Mike would want too.
I really think it's so much more than just a book about grief.
Mm-hmm.
It's about faith. It's about hope.
Yeah.
It's about love. It's those the three great things. And I think that's why it's a read that everyone can enter into. It's those things that point us towards heaven, to our, the ultimate, that journey that we're all on, to the center, to the heart of Christ. And that's why I feel that it's so much more. I mean, it's not, I just don't want it to be categorized as, I can't look at that, it'll make me sad. No, this is a book just for the love of wonderful reading. That's what this is. I mean, because you have just such a beautiful way with writing. But also, you come away, your faith is deepened, your desire is deepened, it going beyond regret.
Yes.
To keep moving forward. That's why I think Wish You Were Here travels through loss and hope is, I would love to know what the title is that you originally wanted.
it had a very different kind of angle. It was called Little Volcanoes, and you've read the book, you know what that refers to. Little Volcanoes, A Memoir of Cicely Death and Driving. And again, if you've read the book, all of that makes sense, the driving part included.
I love the driving part would inspire me to try to do the same in France, by the way. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and so, and the Little Volcanoes part, I mean, it refers to something in Sicily that we saw, but to me, I also wanted it to evoke sort of the children, maybe in a way, but all of us. And, you know, the sort of what we see and the mystery of what is sort of surging inside us. And, you know, the respect we have for that everybody we see. As some people say it was St. John Chrysostom. I don't know, said, you know, be kind for everyone is fighting a great battle.
Mm.
That, you know, everybody is walking around with, you know, loss, regret, and so our call is to be kind, and so, you know, that was the original, and you know, again, it was people loved it at first, and then they thought, no, they just had trouble with it, and so I came up with Wish You Were Here, which is a cliche in a way, and there are other books with that title, but it very truly expresses the book, in that, you know, the book is about wishing you were here, but then the challenge of that to faith. And, you know, do I want to stop with Wish You Were Here? Or where does Wish You Were Here, wishing you were here, take me?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, Amy Wellborn, it's just a delight to be able to talk with you once again, and especially about this work. And what's new? What's coming in the hopper? Please tell me. You're continuing. And
well, this book really took it out of me. I mean, I worked on it for a while. There were a lot of rewrites, and I've been working. I've been doing a little bit of work with Word on Fire, with Father Barron's organization, and that's it. I don't have anything big on the horizon as yet. I'm still sort of, you know, just, I haven't been inspired. So
Northern
we'll
Italy
see.
Is really beautiful, you know. Northern Italy has got a lot of gems in there, too.
That's true.
Well, Amy, God bless you, and I hope we talk again very soon.
Thank you, Chris. It was a great interview. Thank you.
With Amy Wellborn, we've gone inside the pages of Wish You Were Here, Travels Through Loss and Hope. To learn more about this book or to obtain a copy, go to imagecatholicbooks.com, the website for its publisher, Image Books, or you can obtain it at any fine Catholic bookstore. To hear and download this discussion along with many others, go to discerninghearts.com. This has been a production of discerninghearts.com. I'm your host, Chris McGregor. Join me next time for Inside the Pages, insights from today's most compelling authors.